Today is October 15th, 1974, a Tuesday. The following interview is with Kenneth R. Cole, C-O-L-E. Mr. Cole is currently the Assistant to the President for Domestic Affairs and serves as Executive Director of the Domestic Council. The interview will take place in Mr. Cole's office on the second floor of the West Wing of the White House. Terry Good will conduct the interview. See how this thing goes. I might add that I will probably act more ignorant of some of these things than I really am, but that seems to be the most logical approach during these interviews.
Yeah.
Because that way you'll get your views on the record, so to speak.
Okay.
Starting with, let's say, February of 68, I understand that's when you joined the
right
nucleus of the campaign team. Could you just briefly say how it was that you came to get involved in it at that point?
It goes back to 1966 when I was with the J. Walter Thompson Company, and Dwight Chapin came from California to work in the New York office of Thompson. And Dwight replaced me on one of the accounts that I was handling. And he and I, in the process of that transfer of responsibilities, came to be pretty good friends. And it was through him that I learned of the political activities of then lawyer Richard Nixon. And I indicated to Dwight that if I could help any way, why, I'd like to do that, which was followed by his suggestion that I write a letter to Mr. Nixon indicating my interest in working for him and why, which I did. I'm sure through the efforts of Dwight, in addition to the letter, I heard from a fellow by the name of Tom Evans, who was one of Mr. Nixon's law partners. And Tom indicated that they had some administrative work that needed to be done on a volunteer basis. And would I be interested in coming down to talk with him about it, which I said I was. And that was in probably March of 1967. And it was shortly thereafter that I met with Mr. Evans, and he and I worked out a plan whereby I put together a group of, I guess, four other men who handled administrative chores that were in the political area. And basically, this was really just responding to all of the correspondence that Mr. Nixon got from various people on various issues. And I also did some work as an advance man from time to time as the need arose during the year 1967. But I worked basically two nights a week down in his law office with these other fellows doing the mail.
Who were the other people on that team?
Bill Kilgallen, Dick Whitney, I don't remember who else there was. There was a couple other guys.
But that was just two nights a week.
Just two nights a week, yeah. And then in January of 68, I guess Tom Evans called and asked me if I'd take a leave of absence from my job and go to work full-time in the campaign. And I indicated that I would, and I guess started in February 1968 with the Nixon campaign organization.
What were your responsibilities at that point?
Initially, I worked for John Whitaker here in Washington as his assistant. John was responsible for the scheduling and the arrangements of the president's trips. And I worked here from about the 1st of February, or February 12th, I think it was, somewhere around Lincoln's birthday, through the end of March, I think. End of March or early April, I'm not sure. It was after the, I believe, Wisconsin primary, if that was the second primary. I worked here in Washington doing that, and then I moved to New York, and there I had the responsibility of setting up the various procedures, the administrative procedures for the national campaign. and helped with the running of the New York campaign headquarters, which included the business of how do we process the mail, telephones, communications, hiring and firing of people, recruiting volunteers, and that kind of thing. And that position lasted through about 3 weeks prior to the Republican National Convention, and I don't even remember when that was. But at that time, I got sent down to Florida to put together the communications, or to hold together the communications situation, which involved radios and telephones and all of that, and how do you communicate from one hotel to the next, and how the president's political advisors communicate from various state delegations, and how do you handle your communications on the floor. And then I set up that system, or helped to set it up, working with John Davies. And then John basically had responsibility for the telephone setup. And then I helped to implement that after the convention started. And after the convention, I came back to New York and served as the director of advancement. And we had, I think, 65 advance men who handled the presidential candidate, the vice presidential candidate, Mrs. Nixon and the girls, and assorted surrogates. And it was my job to assign the advance men and make sure that they carried out what needed to be done at each of the various stops. My efforts were primarily concerned with the presidential candidate, and other people handled the vice president and surrogates and so on.
And then that takes us through the election, moving now into the transition period, November to January.
Right. Okay. I guess it was just prior to the election that Bob Haldeman asked me if I'd be willing to move down to Washington to become a member of the White House staff in a capacity that was as yet uncertain. And I said, yeah, I'd think about it. I wasn't sure, but I would think about it, and ultimately decided that that would be the thing for me to do. And I was assigned the responsibility for putting together the administrative procedures here in the White House. How do papers flow to the president? How do we make sure that his decisions get implemented? How do we coordinate the activities of various members of the White House staff and the cabinet and that kind of thing? And I was down here in Washington working with Bill Hopkins, who was the executive assistant to the president at that time, and other people in developing the system, which ultimately went to Haldeman and I guess to the president-elect for his review and approval prior to its being put in place. And then I came down here in January 1969 as special assistant to the president and as staff secretary. And as staff secretary, I was responsible for the administration of the White House, basically. There we are.
Okay. Then for this period of beginning in January 1969, you were a special assistant and responsible for staffing the White House,
right,
seeing that it operated paper flows and what have you. That ran roughly from January through November, or to November of 69.
That's right. November of 69, I moved over to be Deputy Assistant to the President for Domestic Affairs, and that followed the appointment of John Ehrlichman as Assistant to the President for Domestic Affairs. And my job for John, at least initially, was basically an administrative one, the management of his domestic policy staff. And during that period of time, in addition to managing the staff, I was also working on the legislation or reorganization plan that would be required to set up the institutional entity of the Domestic Council. And I guess that was implemented in July of 1970. And at that time, I retained the title of Deputy Assistant to the President for Domestic Affairs, and also assumed the title as Deputy Director of the Domestic Council. I held that position through December of 1972, And in December of 1972, I was designated executive director of the Domestic Council, a position which I still hold. And then in addition, in January of 1974, I was appointed assistant to the president for domestic affairs.
With that chronological outline, Ken, if I can go back and just ask a
sure.
few questions to fill in. During that period, January to November of 69, when you were special assistant to the president, your responsibilities were essentially as you've described them. You were primarily then a man working within the White House complex with few contacts outside the complex.
No, that's the way it started, but as it developed, I began to develop in March or April a number of contacts outside of the White House, primarily because of the lack of movement on the president's legislative program. Nothing was happening. And after conversations which I initiated with Bob Haldeman, it was concluded that in addition to what I was doing in-house, I ought to take the responsibility of seeing if I couldn't get some kind of action from the departments and agencies as far as legislative messages and legislation itself was concerned. And so I developed a much more outside kind of approach to what needed to be done, and consequently became very intimately involved in the president's total, at that time, was basically domestic legislative program.
So this, more or less, was an evolution?
It was an evolutionary kind of thing, yeah. It's been evolutionary right through the whole thing.
When you came down to talk to Bill Hopkins during the transition period to set up the procedures for the White House, did the final form of that follow the organization of the Johnson White House, or were there distinct differences?
No, I think it was quite different from the Johnson White House. I never got that deeply into the thing. The blueprint that we used was based primarily on the Eisenhower system, which had a staff secretary who was responsible for how things flowed within the White House, coordinating the flow of them, coordinating the flow within the executive branch of the government, and ensuring that things that went to the president were in a form for his decision, and then that those decisions were followed up after he had made them. And then, of course, you branched into the personnel and the payroll and the messengers and that kind of thing from that. There was a pamphlet that we used at that time, and the name Carter Burgess sticks in my mind, but I'm sure that's the wrong name. Maybe it's not. Who had been here during the Eisenhower period and who had basically designed a system that we then took off from. In addition to that, we utilized the report of the committee that was headed by, I believe it was Frank Lincoln, which provided the president some thoughts on how the office of the president ought to be organized. We utilized that too. But ultimately, the system that was designed around the president, and we used that as a base and then developed this thing around him. It was really, I think, quite dissimilar to the Johnson White House.
Your role in shaping that then would have been one of being one of the primary people involved in it. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. I put all the stuff down, and the ideas that ultimately were accepted were, you know, to the extent of the guidance I have, my ideas, and I'm the one that put them on paper, and ultimately they were approved, maybe with some refinements, but I don't remember many.
Moving on to that period, November of 69, as Deputy Assistant on Domestic Affairs, I gather then that you were doing the same thing for the Domestic Affairs that you had done for the White House.
Yeah, our conclusion was, as we surveyed the thing, we had this We had, during the first part of that year of 1969, we had both Arthur Burns and Pat Moynihan here in the White House, who were kind of on opposite ends of the ideological spectrum when it came to domestic affairs. And when Arthur Burns moved on to the Federal Reserve Board, the thought was that we ought to draw on Pat Moynihan's creative talents as far as thinking of programs and that kind of thing was concerned, but that because there were so many departments and agencies of the government involved in each single problem, that we needed to have a coordinating body that necessarily did not have an ideological point of view to it, so that the president got all sides of an issue and not just one that happened to be advocated by his staff person. So we formed the domestic council staff, and basically there my job was to oversee the activity of that staff, which was involved in the work of managing the development of coordinated sets of policy options for the president.
This would have been an administrative assignment rather than a policy?
As it developed, it was initially administrative, and as the workload began to grow over the first few months of it, it became not only administrative but a policy sort of situation where, short of the president, John Ehrlichman and I divided responsibility so that John handled some things and I handled others.
Was this division of responsibilities a rather clear-cut thing?
No, it was totally unstructured. It just depended upon how much time John had, what kind of guidance he had from the president, how important the particular issue was, and a whole range of issues that needed to be addressed by either the president or John, or as the case developed, by me.
It would not necessarily follow during this period of time, then, that all paper flow would have passed across your desk.
No, all paper flow did pass across my desk. Whether it was John's problem or my problem or whose ever problem, it all passed across my desk during the period, on things involving a domestic policy kind of situation, the substantive stuff. There was other things that John did as legal counsel that did not cross my desk.
It would have come to your attention for what purpose? Approval, disapproval, additional input, or simply FYI?
It would have come across my desk for any range of things. FYI is a possibility. That would be the case if it was something that had already been done. Approval or disapproval if it was something that I could make a decision on. For more or less a final review to make sure that it was complete, that all the questions had been asked and answers provided before it went to the president, to make sure that a thorough job had been done.
During this period of time, then, your contacts with the outside world would have continued and increased?
Yes.
Were they now going beyond the bounds of the departments and agencies?
Yeah, they went out, not only departments and agencies, but the Congress and people from the private sector and people from state and local governments.
Were you doing any traveling during this period of time, speak of?
Only to the extent that I might be making a speech or something like that. That was all.
By and large, then, you were based here in the White
House. I was based here in the White House, yeah.
In December of 72, then, when you became executive director of the Domestic Council, did your responsibilities or assignments change to any marked degree?
Only that I began to have even an increased contact with the president, that it was clear that I was totally in charge of day-to-day operations, and that everything basically fell to me with the exception of a very few things which the president gave to John.
The liaison work with the intergovernmental, or I should say the liaison work with state, local,
yeah,
government officials. Did that occupy a good portion of your time, or was that just merely one of the other
It matters? Did initially. For the first 3 or 4 months, it took about 40% of my time. After that, as the people who worked with me in that area began to get known and began to build the confidence of these guys, why, then it took less, so that it was taking 20%, and now maybe only 10. But that, you know, that depends on the kind of the height of the moon. Some issues, it's unbelievable.
From December 72 through, I guess, August 9th, 74, since that's the cutoff point, would your responsibilities be fairly well documented? Your inputs, your policy decisions?
Yeah, I would think that they would be. I mean, my policy decisions, I don't know how well documented they would be, because I started doing an awful lot of things orally as opposed to in writing after March of 1973. I write 1% of the memos that I used to write, if that many. Now, there were things that we moved to the president, and where it required his policy decisions or informational kind of things, that would be in the files.
Prior to December of 72, would there be more documentation that would have your name on it? Or does the degree of documentation decrease as your responsibilities increase?
Prior to December 72, most of the things that went to the president, whether they were done by me or by one of the staff guys, were done under John Ehrlichman's name. After that, they were done under my name, basically. So that the paper documentation would increase after 72 from what it was prior to that time. That doesn't necessarily reflect the change in responsibilities, because an awful lot of the work that I was continued to do in 72, after 72, I was already doing prior to that, because this whole thing has been evolutionary. The more I could handle, the more I got. So I sunk.
Trying to track you then through the papers will be difficult, and we should not be misled by the few documents that bear your name.
No, I don't know. I think you'd have to ask Carol. I'm not sure whether the things in the files are not only in my files, but in other files as well. I have a cron file of things that I assume include even stuff that I did in John's name. And so I think that it might be traceable that way, but I don't know if she could tell you.
Roughly speaking, do you have any sort of a typical day? Can you anticipate that tomorrow morning I've got the 7:30 meeting, then an 8:30 meeting, so on through the day, with the afternoon given over to ad hoc meetings?
No. I mean, I know every day I have a 7:30 meeting. I know every day I have what is now an 8 o'clock meeting, and above and beyond that, it could depend on what the particular needs of that day or that week were. How many problems that I have. I'm able to schedule my meetings fairly much in advance, but it always gets fouled up one way or another, so that I have to make changes.
Have you increased your traveling?
I would say that I've been given a lot more speeches than I used to give, so that I'm probably, with the exception of the last maybe month and a half, I'm probably out of the office about once a week for a day.
The people within the White House complex that you would be dealing with on a regular basis, let's say from December 72 on, would be all of the assistants to the president?
Yeah, all the assistants to the president, plus my staff, plus the OMB staff and the congressional liaison staff, although I deal with most of those people through my people.
Your contacts with your own staff have been as much over the phone, face-to-face, as they might be in the form of a memo?
There is very little communication between me and my staff by memorandum. Most of it is, 95% of it is oral, either by the phone or in meetings.
Your contacts with the staff, would they be, in most instances, perhaps a meeting every day or so?
I have a meeting on Tuesdays and Thursdays with the staff, plus I talk to them fairly regularly on the phone. That's in addition to the 7:30 meeting.
So it's a close-knit organization?
Yes, very, very.
There are a lot of questions, Ken, that go into far more detail about various responsibilities and activities that you've had. I would like to postpone those maybe for another time.
Okay.
And this is more or less the way we approach these interviews. This is the initial one with hopefully more to come after we've had a chance to go through the files and come up with some additional questions where there appear to be gaps in the records or confusions. You've given me the outline that we feel is crucial at this point, and now we can begin to build on that.
I think for your own purposes, where there is a question in your mind, not that I can recall it, but there aren't many things that happened that involved domestic policy that I somehow or another wasn't involved in. I may not know all the details, but I know, if I can recall them, most of them.
Policy-wise, were there any policies that will reflect your thinking in a major way? Is there any domestic program, project, policy?
Yeah, the health thing. The president's whole health policy is the one. And the health policy and the reorganization of the setting up of the domestic council and reorganization OMB. But anything in the health area, basically, would be mine.
Will there be documents reflecting?
There should be.
Your secretary or secretaries, could you just run down the names? Has Carol Patrick been your secretary?
Patrick's been my secretary for the whole time I've been here, basically.
Is there any sort of a permanent mailing address that we could always feel fairly certain of reaching you through?
For the time being, yeah. 5101 Baltan, Baltan Road, Bethesda, 20016.
Are you a member of any professional organizations that will probably keep track of you, or an alumni association? You're a Bucknell graduate.
Yeah.
Are they going to?
I don't know if they're going to know any better than you know.
Usually they strive pretty hard to keep track of
the
prominent alums.
But I fight them every inch of the way, so there's no...
brothers or sisters that are fairly well stationary?
Yeah, they'll know where I am. I don't know what their address is. Here's my brother. He's probably the most firmly planted, and his name is Brady Cole, C-O-L-E. And I think Carol's probably got his address.
Well, as you can tell from these questions, it's a shotgun fishing expedition type approach. Is there anything that you think is particularly significant that you might want to toss out now that would help us as we prepare for future interviews?
No, I can't think of anything. I mean, I know so much that you have to draw it out of me. I can't think of it to tell you, which I'm sure is the...
Well, we can start with the health policy.
Problem that you have, you know, and we can start with health, but any of these things that went on, I had a very large role in, and if I'm asked the right questions, I can remember most of them.
There have been a number of articles about you since you have become assistant to the president. The Bill Gilday article is significant, at least in its length, and it strikes me as being a fairly well-balanced article.
I couldn't have written it better myself.
Are there any others that come to mind that are significant either because of their length, or the detail that they go into, or perhaps if they're terribly off base.
There's one in Nation's Business that's a good article. There have been others, but I mean they're not significant. The Man in the News thing in the New York Times and other articles that appeared in that news and the what have you, and that, I mean they're, you know, they're nice articles. And off base, I've only had three out of the hundreds that have been written that I've seen anyway that are off base, and that's just guys that, you know, made up their mind to do a hatchet job. Two of them never even bothered to talk to me before they did it, so they don't know what the hell they're talking about on top of it all. But
well, this gives us the kind of information we're after. I might add that we do intend to get these things transcribed and
back to you for your review and make any modifications, corrections you want.
I'll believe my sneeze.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.